From the studios of Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. Alana Stewart is my guest. She is the president of the Farrah Fawcett Foundation, a cancer research foundation at farrahfawcettfoundation.org. Alana Stewart has been a model, an actress, and a talk show host. She was married to two famous men, although not at the same time, George Hamilton, who played Hank Williams in the movie Your Cheatin' Heart, and Rod Stewart, who was the vocalist for the Jeff Beck Group. Alana Stewart is the author of My Journey with Farrah, A Story of Life, Love, and Friendship, and a new memoir entitled Rearview Mirror. She is also a world-class Trivial Pursuit enthusiast. Alana Stewart, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I love the references to George and Rod, the Hank Williams story, boy, and Jeff Beck.
Well, I wanted our listeners to know who we're talking about.
You know what's really funny is that I saw the Your Cheatin' Heart, the Hank Williams story, for the first time at the drive-in in Texas.
When you were living there?
When I was young, yeah, when I was a teenager. It was the first time that I really saw George Hamilton.
You know, that's not a bad movie. I like it a lot.
I loved it. I thought he was terrific as Hank Williams.
I think so, too. Trivial Pursuit is big at our house, too. But when you were playing with a lot of people who were actually the answers to the questions.
Isn't that funny? That's really true. One night I was playing with a group, and Farrah Fawcett was one of our players, and she was actually on my team. She and Ryan both, and the question, I can't remember the question, but the answer was a movie that she was in, Logan's Run, and she didn't know the answer at first.
She didn't know, even though she was in the picture.
And I remember Ryan saying, "You're nitwit, you were in that picture, Logan's Run."
Well, I want to ask you about some of your famous friends. You know, one of my heroes was David Janssen. He was the star of The Fugitive and Harry O. And I love this story you tell about the time that he made you feel better when you were depressed. It's such a wholesome story. Do you know what I'm referring to?
I know exactly what you're referring to.
Tell us.
I had just found out that my divorce with George had gone through, and we had put it on hold and somehow went through without our realizing it, and I went into this major depression, and I got into my bed, and I wouldn't get out of bed for like 3 days, and my friends were worried about me, and I remember Tina Sinatra. David at that time was married to Danny Janssen, who was also a good friend, and she and Tina called David, who was down at the beach, say a few houses down from where I was, and said, "You better go down there, because she's really not in good shape." So he came and knocked on the door, and he came in and he said, "Okay, Tex, get out of bed. We're going to have a drink. And what do you want to drink?" And I said, "Oh, I don't know. Well, maybe I'll have." And I remembered back a long time ago in New Orleans, I'd had a Ramos Gin Fizz, and I said, "I want a Ramos Gin Fizz." And so he said, "Okay, well, come on, we'll go to the liquor store." So we went to the liquor store and got the ingredients, and went back to my house and made Ramos Gin Fizzes and drank them all afternoon. And I think, as I said in the book, it didn't cure my heartache in one afternoon, but it sure did help temporarily.
Isn't that nice? David Janssen came and took you to the liquor store.
He was such a great guy, and he and his wife, Danny, were great friends of mine then. And then he died so suddenly, and it was just a very sad loss for everyone.
He was quite young when he died.
He was. I believe he was 46.
And what kind of a guy was he? Was he a funny? I hear he was a funny fellow.
He was so much fun. I mean, he was one of the most fun people. And when I met Rod, I introduced them, and they just loved each other and had such fun together. But David and I always had such a fun relationship. He always called me Tex, and he teased me just unmercifully. And he had a great sense of humor.
Well, you know, the famous friends in your book, and it's wonderful to hear your stories about them, but they do kind of, I don't know, come and go in your story. I mean, in the case of David Janssen, he passed away, but a lot of them are still alive. And I wonder, when you were putting your book together and looking through your journals, did you think, whatever happened to them? I haven't talked to them in a long time.
Well, most of my friends I'm still in touch with, you know, maybe a few. I'm not, unfortunately, a lot of my really close friends back in those days, like Alan Carr, is no longer with us, and David's no longer with us, and a couple of other people that that we were friends with back in the day. But most of them I'm still friends with or still talk to every now and then.
Oh, good. And can I have their numbers?
Yes, you and all your listeners.
Just to invite them on the show, that's all. well, your book, Rearview Mirror, and it's a wonderful book, and it's very revealing.
Thank you.
About yourself. I mean, you know, not only stuff that happened to you over which you had no control, but also a lot of decisions you made which were, I guess, regrettable decisions, you'd have to say. And so what made you decide to suddenly reveal all this stuff?
Well, I wanted to write a book that was not a typical Hollywood tell-all, and I hope that I accomplished that, because I think I respected people's privacy, and most of the stories I tell in there about my friends are fun stories, but a lot of the things that I do talk about in there that happened to me are very things that, you know, up until this point I kept very deeply private. But I have this feeling that if you share things that happened to you that were very difficult or painful in your life, if you can share them and share how you overcame them or got through to them, it's very helpful to other people, because I know in my life it's been very helpful to me when I started on a road of some kind of spiritual recovery after Rod and I split up. I started by going to 12-step meetings, and I don't talk about them too much because they're, you know, anonymous in a way. But I used to hear people share their stories, and I would so relate to their stories. And when they shared their experience, strength, and hope, it gave me hope that I could get through that as well. And I think there's a lot in my book that a lot of people will identify with.
Well, that's true, and I loved those things. But then, I mean, I really enjoyed reading the book, but there are also a lot of things that we won't identify with, in that, you know, I don't run with your crowd. You know, I mean, you were this person who almost as soon as you left home, you started really hanging out with stars and famous people and millionaires.
Yeah, but I didn't grow up like that. I mean, I grew up out in the country in Texas on a dirt road with an outhouse, and we would live on potato soup. I lived with my grandmother. My mother had me when she was 20, and she and my father split up right after I was born, and she went to Houston to work, and I lived in this little town called Nacogdoches with my grandmother, and we were very poor. We had no money at all, and even as I got older and moved to Houston to live with my mother and my stepfather, we still were not, we still didn't have money. You know, I never really had any kind of money to speak of until I started working as a model. I started work when I was 14, I think, and I worked before then babysitting in the neighborhood, but I started work at 14 at behind the candy counter at Woolworths. So I didn't grow up, you know, into this. I mean, wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth, and I know what it's like to be poor, and I respect it. And I think my values today come from that background. You know, I feel like the only stability I had in my life when I was young was with my grandmother. My mother was addicted to drugs, and my stepfather was an alcoholic, and later on when I moved in with them when I was 9, from then on my life was kind of living hell. So I didn't have it easy growing up, and I moved to New York to model and to try to get away from my past and my dysfunctional family and the pain that I had felt growing up. I didn't want to deal with it, so I just, you know, kept moving. And I didn't even have it easy when I first started modeling. I wasn't discovered overnight. I trudged around the streets of New York and lived on a book called New York on $5 a day and ate hot dogs and pizza for many, many months before I started to really work as a model.
So we're talking with Alana Stewart, and her book, a memoir, is called Rearview Mirror. Alana Stewart, you just said that, you know, the way you were raised helped form your values. Do you think it also helped to form your anxieties too, as you were growing, you know, once you became successful?
Well, Well, I never knew my father, and my real father, and my mother, as I said, left me with my grandmother when I was a little over a year old. And so, of course, you know, when you never know your father, and you do feel a sense of abandonment, and sometimes I would go to live with my mother, and then I'd be back with my grandmother. And I didn't have a real sense of stability in my life growing up, except when I was with my grandmother, who was a very faith-based woman, and she was religious, and she was strict, but she really loved me, and she had great values and morals, and I believe those were instilled in me. And I think that her faith is probably what got me through later in life when I did go through, you know, very, very difficult times.
And you talk a lot about your faith or your, not, well, you don't specifically talk about religion in the book in the sense that you don't say what religion it is you follow, but you talk about being a spiritual person.
Well, I think that's very, very, it's a very important part of my life now, and I think it's the only thing that got me through the hard times, and I really turned much more to that faith and that spirituality when, you know, I mean, people can look at my life and it may look like a fairy tale. Yes, I started modeling, and I met George Hamilton, and I married him, and I was married to Rod Stewart, and but those weren't always easy times, and there was a lot of painful times in there. And I discussed the breakup of both of my marriages, both of which were very painful. And after my breakup with Rod, I really fell apart emotionally and physically. And I had three little children, and I had to pull myself together. And that's when I really kind of had to reach inside and find some strength, and that's when I really turned to the spiritual part of my life.
But you're also interested in, and you have held beliefs in, I don't know if you still do, in you talk about astrology, and you talk about mediums, yeah, psychics, and so forth. Is that all still part of the same thing for you, or not?
Well, not as much as it used to be. I mean, I was so kind of desperate to find something to hold on to when I was a young woman. And really until I started, after my breakup with Rod, and started really looking into myself, I was desperate to find something to hold on to help me through, because I had just kept shoving all those painful memories down inside me, and I kept running from them, and I never faced them. And you know, you can only run so far, and then eventually it catches up with you. And I think that if I hadn't have had that spiritual side of my life to turn to and to get more involved in when I was older, I don't know how I would have made it through. I really don't think I would have.
Well, Alana Stewart, in your previous book, you told in detail about your relationship with Farrah Fawcett toward the end of her life, and it's a very moving book, and also there was the film that you made. And you talk a little bit about it in this book, and you also state there's no point in telling the whole story again since it's in the other book. But this one moment that you talk about, if you don't mind telling that story again about the butterfly, that's pretty moving.
Well, just to preface it, I wrote the book because my journey with Farrah, because I felt really it was a tribute to her courage and her inspiration. I mean, she inspired so many people. And when she decided to do the documentary, she was in remission, and she thought that the documentary, she felt it was going to be about are finding this cure for her cancer by looking into alternative methods and going outside the United States and everything. And it didn't turn out that way. And so when she died, that wasn't meant to be the end of the documentary. That it wasn't meant to have that kind of ending. But I wrote about our friendship, and I wrote about her battle against cancer because I thought it would help to inspire people, you know, who either were battling cancer, or people who were relatives or friends, loved ones of somebody battling cancer. And when she died, it was devastating to me because I was determined to do everything in my power to try to help her stay alive. And And I felt in some way I failed her because I wasn't able to, you know, well, I'm not God, and of course I should, you know, I shouldn't have felt that way, but I did. And I took it very hard. It took me, I would say, a good year to just before I physically and emotionally sort of pulled myself together after she died. And about, I guess about 9 months after she died, I went to Mexico. And the last time I had been there was a friend of ours' house on the beach in Mexico. And the time that I had been there before that had been with her. And it was, she had cancer, but she was feeling much better, and she was in a kind of remission, and we went down there to just get some sun and just relax, and we had such a wonderful time that trip. We were down there for a week, and so when I went back after her death, I didn't realize how hard it was going to be for me, and I remember lying out on the chaise one day and looking at the chaise, empty chaise next to me, and just my eyes filling up with tears, and this tremendous sadness came over me, and I missed her like I'd never missed her. And I walked inside the house, and the house was all open, you know, no doors or anything. And I got a piece of watermelon, and I put it on a plate, and I sat down on the sofa, and I was just looking outside at the waves, and I saw this white thing. I thought it was a bird. I wasn't sure. It was kind of fluttering around outside, and then suddenly it came inside, and it was a huge white butterfly. I've never seen a white butterfly that large before. I don't even know if I've ever seen a white butterfly. But it fluttered toward me, and I mean, I have chills as I'm telling the story again, and it fluttered over and it sat down. It landed, not sat down, it landed on the edge of my plate. And it just looked up at me, and it had these two big black eyes, and just looked at me, and it sat there. I don't know, it seemed like an eternity. Maybe it was 5 seconds. And then it fluttered away. And I just knew in that moment that that was like her sending a sign, or just to say, I'm okay, don't be sad, I'm in a better place. And that's how I end that, you know, that part of my book. But it just, to me, it still chokes me up to talk about it.
Yeah. Oh, it's a beautiful story. Alana Stewart, you're also an actress, and you've been part of many projects and films and TV shows. You hosted your own talk show with your ex-husband. And I have a trailer here of one of your films, if you don't mind. I'm just going to play it for everybody. Listen to this one.
Come and spend a night with the night call nurses, experts in their profession. They nurse patients the way no doctor can. Night call nurses love their work. You will want to taste their brand of medicine. On or off duty, they get it on.
Oh my God, I can't.
Nurses dispensing pills and thrills. They give out more than first aid. Nursing. It's always harder at night.
I have my own instrument of communication.
Now, why did you have to go and do that?
Night Call Nurses exposes everything you've always wanted to know about nurses.
That was the trailer for Night Call Nurses, starring my guest, Alana Stewart.
Oh, my God. Where in the world would you find that? And you know what, the terrible thing? It sounds like it's some kind of porno film. And it's not. It's a Roger Corman B-movie. Roger Corman being the big producer that did those early motorcycle movies with Jack Nicholson. And he started a lot of famous actors other than Jack Nicholson, and famous directors, you know, who went on to become famous directors. And he's a very, very well-known producer in town, but he did this whole series of B-movies, and that was one of them, Night Call Nurses. It was the first movie I ever did. And it's so funny because to listen to it, it really does sound awful. It does sound like it's a porno film, and it's really not.
Nursing is harder at night. That was like the tag.
Oh, my God. It was such an innocent film. If you really look at the things that are in there today, I mean, there was certainly no, you know, nudity or private parts, or I don't even know if there were any curse words, but, you know, that was back in the...
I saw it at the drive-in over here.
In the 70s. So, it was nothing. It was just totally innocent, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. There were a lot of nurse pictures. They were big.
Yes, I know. There were, and stewardess pictures. Well, I did go on to do some better things, fortunately. Thank God. You know who the director was? Jonathan Kaplan. That was one of the, I think, the first film he directed, and then he went on to direct Jodie Foster and The Accused, which she won an Oscar for. And he went on to do quite a few other films after that.
You also did a lot of TV work. You were on The Bionic Woman. You were on, The Love Boat, or was it?
So many of those shows, yes. Fantasy Island and all of those shows. I guess starred on so many of those. And I did some movies. I did a remake of Where the Boys Are for Alan Carr. The funny thing about it was George was in the original back in the 60s, and I was in the one that they remade in the 80s. And quite a few other ones, too. In fact, the funny thing is I did a movie called Delivered, a little low-budget movie a couple years ago, and it sort of made its rounds of the film festivals and things, and ended up at going to WorldFest at Houston last year, and I won Best Supporting Actress.
Well, congratulations.
And it won an award there, too, and thank you. I never, so it's the only award, acting award I won, but I was very proud of it. I play the mother of a returning soldier from Iraq who's very, very badly injured in the war, and it was a really interesting part to get to play and a wonderful opportunity, and I think you can go online and either see the movie or see parts of it. It's called Delivered.
Delivered. And you also starred in that movie with the guy in the gorilla suit and the kid.
Oh, that's right. My gosh.
Mom, Can I Keep Her?
Mom, Can I Keep Her? Yes.
Most convincing gorilla that you've ever seen.
I know, and Justin Burfill plays my stepson from Malcolm in the Middle.
Yeah,
that was a fun one too. We shot that out in the valley, and we shot it in about 13 days in 120 degree heat.
Oh God. Well, Alana Stewart, your new book is called Rearview Mirror. In your book, you talk quite a bit about your own health issues. How's your health now?
Oh, much better. Much better. I still have to kind of take it easy. You know, I have to not overdo. But I had, when I was married to Rod, I was diagnosed with Epstein-Barr after I had Sean, my third child. I got very, very sick, and I think it just was because I had two children 12 months apart, and I was, you know, trying to keep up with Rod, and we were traveling, and he was touring, and I just got run down and got very, very sick, and it was in the early 80s when people really didn't know so much what Epstein-Barr was, and it caused me a lot of health problems for many, many years. I had the after effects of it, but at the time I was really sick. I mean, so sick I could barely lift my arm at times, I felt, and it was a tough time in my life, and it sort of led into this, I guess what they call now chronic fatigue syndrome, CFS, which I have struggled with off and on for the last, since I had Epstein-Barr. But I found ways to combat it, and I live a pretty, very healthy life. Let's say I lead a very healthy life. I watch what I eat, and I eat very healthy things, and I do yoga, and I meditate, and I take a lot of different vitamins and supplements, and I think all that has really helped me a lot. But I think the thing that helps you the most is for me, it's like meditation and prayer and, you know, staying spiritually centered.
Have your ex-husbands read your book?
I don't know. I mean, I know that I don't think George has, because he's touring in La Cage aux Folles. I think he's in Chicago. I talked to him the other night because it was our son Ashley's birthday. And I know, though, that I don't know if Rod's read it, but I know he read the beginning of it, because there was a very shocking incident that I start the book out with when I was 18, and I actually was someone broke into my apartment and held a knife to my throat in the middle of the night, And I was raped, and he never knew that. And I start the book out with it because it was such a transformational moment in my life. Obviously a terrifying, devastating moment, but because of it, I decided to move to New York and get away from Texas and my past and my family, and that was kind of the moment that really gave me the push to do it. And he had never known that, and he said to me, you know, you never told me that. And I said, you know, I didn't tell anyone that. It was so, back in those days, it was so shameful, and it was such a stigma for something like that to happen to you, even though it wasn't my fault. You know, it's just the way women were made to feel back then.
Did Rod Stewart feel that that was like an indication of things you hadn't told him? Or do you feel that there's like a lack of communication with your husbands?
Well, I think, yes, on both sides. I think, especially, you know, with George, we were very young when we married, and Rod and I were fairly young when we met and married, and we just didn't talk about our innermost feelings or secrets, and it was just because I don't think we knew how to be really emotionally available. I learned that years later in therapy and 12-step programs and, you know, various spiritual programs, but it took me a long time to learn to open up about my past.
Well, now you've written two books, and apparently, based on what you say in your book, you've kept journals all your life. You've always been a writer. So will there be more books from you?
You know, I'd like to think so. I really do like writing, and I'd like to write a book about inner and outer beauty, because I think so much of it is about not what you put on the outside, but what you do on the inside and how you think. And
well, you got the outer beauty down, I'll tell you.
Oh, well, you silver-tongued devil, you.
The book is called Rearview Mirror, and the author is Alana Stewart. Thank you so much for spending some time with us on From the Bookshelf.
Well, thank you so much. It's really been a pleasure talking to you.
Well, that's it for this week's edition of From the Bookshelf. I hope you enjoyed the show and that you'll come back and see us again next time. In the meantime, check out our podcast page. It's www.fromthebookshelf.com, or you can find us at kusp.org. I want to thank my guest, Alana Stewart. Her book is called Rearview Mirror, a Memoir. From the Bookshelf's producer is Francis Venegas. I'm Gary Shapiro. Thanks for listening.